Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. It's Tuesday. That means open forum. That means if you have a question about the Catholic faith, whether you are Catholic or not, whether you've ever thought about calling a Catholic radio program or never thought about it, you're welcome to call with your question. 888-318-7884 is the number. That's 888-318-7884. And to help us answer those questions today, we have two wonderful guests for you. Second hour, our own Tim Staples will be here with us. This hour, we welcome El Encantador. That is Patrick Madrid, the jefe of Catholic Radio. He hosts the Patrick Madrid Show nationwide on the Relevant Radio Network each morning. And he is the author of, you know, Patrick, I can never remember the number of books, but I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to take a shot in the dark that now you are at 28 books.
You know, that's a very flattering guess. I appreciate that. But no, I'm just trying to wind up number 27.
Not very flattering. I mean, I'm only one ahead of you. Okay. So as you were telling me before we went on the air, Patrick, you are 4 years older than I am. So if
so that makes you about 31.
Yep, I'm 31. Which is awesome. Exactly. Yeah. And that means if in the next 4 years I can write 27 books, I can be caught up with you.
You could, yeah. I mean, why not?
And I'll be caught up with you.
Peter Kreef does that. Peter Kreef writes like 10 books a year. So he can do it.
Yeah. And he doesn't run out of steam either. He's still sharp.
He's a machine. Yeah, amazing. He is our generation C.S. Lewis.
Peter Kreef is in many ways, yeah. Just like C.S. Lewis was his generation's G.K. Chesterton. And yeah. G.K. Chesterton was his generation's I got nobody before that.
I thought you were going to say that C.S. Lewis was his generation's Peter Kreeft. And that would work for me if you said that.
Yeah, I guess it would. But they didn't know about Peter Kreeft then.
True.
Patrick, God, I don't know if you know how the timeline works, but it only goes in one direction. It's called the arrow of time, not the boomerang of time. Patrick,
I've heard that.
888-318-7884 is our number, by the way. And okay, so you said you're working on number 27. What is it? Is it top secret? Is it?
Yeah, it's like, you know, Back to the Future. Doc has got all the things under wraps, so he can't reveal it quite yet. But no, I've got a couple of books coming out. God willing, and The Creek Don't Rise, it'll be next year. But I know people aren't listening to hear about that. They didn't tune in to hear about that stuff.
They didn't?
No.
All right. Well, then, because they're already lighting up the phones to talk with you, Patrick. So perhaps we should go directly to questions.
Let's do it.
Sam in St. Louis is up first. And by the way, if I have not given out the number, 888-318-7884 is the number. If you like the spelled version, it's 888-31-TRUTH. And we go now to Sam, as I said, in St. Louis, listening on 1460 AM. Sam, you are on with Patrick Madrid. Your question, please.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Sam.
My question for you is, I have a cousin of mine who experiences homosexual attraction, and it's been something that she's been dealing with for a long time. She's only just recently started telling people, and wants to start bringing her girlfriend to family get-togethers. And I'm not sure, I have a young daughter, I'm not sure how much we should, like how cautious we should be of that, whether it's appropriate to tell her, okay, it's okay for you to come around, but we just don't want any physical interaction while you're here.
How old is
for some guys?
You said this is your cousin?
Yes.
And how old is she, and how old is your daughter?
She is 18. My daughter is 14 months.
Okay. Well, the 14 months part, that helps, because although, you know, you don't want to expose your children to a lifestyle that you find objectionable, I think one of the upsides is that if you were to have them as guests in your home, even if something like holding hands or a kiss or something were to happen, and we'll talk about that in a second, I don't think it's going to make much of an impact on a 14-month-old child. I don't think the child would not only really understand it, but wouldn't even remember it. So that's my impression, having raised a bunch of kids myself. So I think you've got that going for you. Are you close with your cousin? I mean, is this like a relationship that you've had a close one with her and now it's changed because of her lifestyle choices? Or is it more sort of a distant relationship that you're happen to have her coming over for dinner?
Oh no, she's very close.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so she knows then. And it's not 20 questions. I just want to have an informed answer here. She knows how you and your wife feel about this, and that's out in the open, I guess, right? It's not like it's going to be a surprise to her that you don't approve of the lifestyle choice that she's making. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Well, if it were me, and I, by the way, I have several extended family members who are homosexual, and one of whom is a cousin. So I can kind of relate to the situation that you're in right now. If you invite her over, which I think would be a good thing to do, to show her Christian hospitality, to continue your friendship with her as a family member and love her, and see it as kind of an opportunity for you to demonstrate Christian charity to her, even if she brings this other girl with her, what I would suggest is that you let her know, hey, you know that we're Catholic and that we adhere to the church's teachings on this issue. And so I just ask you that because of our child here, that you would not engage in any kind of display of affection that could cause confusion. That'd be one reasonable thing I think that you could ask. And she may get mad. She may not get mad. She may be okay with it. It's hard to say. You would know. I wouldn't know, but you could predict that. And then just in terms of having a meal with her and visiting with her, I could see a lot of upside there because it would give you an opportunity to not only show her that you're not condemning her and you're not rejecting her, but you continue to love her and you continue to support her, but also it'd be an opportunity for her friend to be in the presence of believers, and maybe the conversation will turn in this direction, and who knows what could happen. Maybe there'll be a chance to really kind of talk it through or give them some suggestions on food for thought. I'm thinking, for example, about that movie that was made by Courage. CourageRC.org is their website, and the movie is called Desire of the Everlasting Hills, which is a really calm, non-confrontational movie about people who have same-sex attraction and how they are striving to live a life of chastity and purity. So these are Catholic folk. And it really speaks to people. And I've even heard from some people who are same-sex attracted that they found a great deal of encouragement there because they always thought, or they were always told, that if you have these feelings, you must act on them. And if anyone tells you otherwise, then that person's a hater and a bigot. So a movie like this, in which you've got people who themselves are same-sex attracted, can be a big step forward. So I mention that simply to say that it sounds like an opportunity for you to do a little bit of, you know, low impact, low velocity evangelization. And maybe it won't lead to that, but maybe it might. So if it were me, I would invite her over and hope that something good would come out of that.
How's that, Sam?
That sounds great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Tell her you love her and remind her, you know, hey, we always want to see you. We love you. We want your happiness, so that she doesn't feel like, well, those, you know, judgmental people, they're rejecting me. You don't want to. Society's already trying to push that idea on them. So I'm sure in your own kind way, you'll be able to de-reinforce that idea.
Thanks, Sam. Appreciate the call. It is open forum here on Catholic Answers Live. So we're supposed to love one another, Patrick. I'm gathering that.
Yeah. Where did I hear that before?
All right. Because I'll tell you what. We have a chaplain here, Father Hugh Barber. He told us at Mass this morning, if you don't get the part about love one another, you're missing the entire point of the Christian faith. I was like, really? Why is no one? Why did they wait till I'm 54 to tell me this? No, I think it was mentioned earlier. Danielle in Louisiana is next. Danielle is listening on 90.5 FM. Danielle, your question for Patrick Madrid.
Hi, how are y'all?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I was at my young adult group at my church last night, and we were talking about the dilemma of whenever husbands and wives, or just women, go to do in vitro fertilization, and they have apparently extra embryos that are frozen, and like, what's the right thing to do about those mm-hmm. embryos? And I was presented with two answers, and just didn't like either. I didn't know how I felt about either one, because one person was saying it's not right to commit a further sin by letting them go through with the in vitro fertilization to avoid letting them die. But then it didn't make sense how letting them die was right. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the church's teaching is on it. I'm just trying to come to a place that I know might have the answer.
Okay, got it. Well, hi, Daniela. First of all, the church does not have a teaching, like a set-piece teaching on this topic, because it's so new as a new birth technology that the church hasn't had yet or hasn't taken yet the opportunity to teach in some formal or specific way on this topic. But the church does have moral principles that encompass this kind of thing. And I try to consult people who are really dialed into these issues even more so than I am. And that describes a lot of other people. But one book I found very helpful, I'll refer you to it. It's called Life Issues, Medical Choices. And it's co-written by Dr. Chris Kazor and Dr. Janet Smith. And they have a whole chapter just on this very issue. What is the morality of embryo adoption in the case of embryos that are on ice due to being conceived through in vitro fertilization? In vitro fertilization is immoral, and Catholic couples need to know. Well, everybody needs to know that, but maybe Catholic couples who are considering it, they need to know the church has, in fact, very clearly and very emphatically said that that is that's immoral, because it invades the normal method of conception in such a way that it turns it into a lab experiment, and it separates the unitive aspect of the sexual act between the husband and the wife. And there's more to it, but it just so people understand that in vitro fertilization is a serious sin and people should not do that. However, what do you do in a situation where couple X has done this and now you've got human beings, unborn human beings, who are on ice in a laboratory somewhere? And we've heard stories in the news, for example, on my radio program, I've talked about this story a few times about children who were on ice for over 20 years and then thawed out and then brought to they were gestated and then brought to, they were born. It's just a horrendous idea to think that these children are on ice somewhere in some dark laboratory freezer. So Dr. Janet Smith and Dr. Chris Kazor, they present the two, you might say, viable options. One is, and this sounds to me like what your friend told you, and that is that it would be immoral to adopt the embryo in terms of having the embryo implanted in the mother, and then the mother would gestate that child and give birth to the child. I personally do not accept that view, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But the other view that they propose is that it is moral because it's a form of rescuing a defenseless person who would otherwise die. And so in a similar kind of way, but it's not exactly the same. If somebody was in a burning building and they couldn't get out and you had a shot to get in there and get that person out of the building, you would be risking your own life. And under normal circumstances, that would be an occasion of sin if you put your life in jeopardy for no good reason. But if you're going into the burning building to save somebody and you think you have a reasonable chance to do so, then it is meritorious and a good thing to do. Now, the reason it's not the same thing as saving an unborn child is because it's one thing to want to save somebody's life by risking your own life, but it's a different issue when it comes to the morality of having in essence, the product of conception, in other words, an unborn child in your own body, and you're not the wife. In other words, it did not happen in the normal way. This is where people have qualms about whether or not it's moral to do so. But the reason that I think that is the right thing to do, and keeping in mind that the church may at some point pronounce otherwise, so since the church has not said anything, I think this is a consistent moral principle that one could adopt an embryo for this reason, and that is that you're saving somebody from death. And I would liken it in a way similar to a woman who breastfeeds a baby who is not her own. So let's say a newborn baby, the mother dies, well, the baby can't nurse from that mother, can't receive the nourishment from that mother's milk. And so another woman who is not the mother nurses the baby. Now, in terms of magnitude, nursing someone else's baby is much smaller than carrying that child in your own womb. But I do see a kind of principle there that seems consistent to me. So let me refer you to that book. It's called Life Issues, Medical Choices, and you can read the whole thing. They have a presentation about the whole issue on all sides. I just shared with you the side that I personally come down on. I don't think it would be immoral for a mother to rescue, or for a woman to rescue an embryo that's on ice if there's no other option. So there you have it. There's my opinion.
And Danielle, we will leave it there because we got to go to a quick break. But thank you so much for that call. It is open forum today. We do have El Jefe, Patrick Madrid, with us this hour. Next hour, Tim Staples will be with us. And if you have a question, our number, 888-318-7884. Today until midnight only, all Catholic Answers ebooks, MP3s, e-magazines, and Catholic Answers speakers DVDs are half price. Just visit the appropriate section at shop.catholic.com for those products, and you will get them at half price. Also, free shipping on Made This Way within the continental U.S. And remember, if you use promo code CALIVE18, you get a 20% discount on hundreds of other non-special items at – well, they're all special. I don't know why someone say non-special items at shop.catholic.com. I guess we're going to be having these special deals – and they get a little complicated, but the main thing, go to shop.catholic.com. If it asks for a promo code, put in CALIVE18, and there's all kinds of deals there. Shop.catholic.com.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
St. John Paul II stated that, for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation.
So we know we're called, but how do we do it?
St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
It's the start of a new day for Morning Catholic Radio.
Isn't it the case that when you're stirring food in a pot, it burns less, like, because it's not just sitting there?
What about your forearms? You get some nice buff forearms when you're doing that stirring.
But let me say, I can totally
get this for you, Gloria. You don't need any help stirring the pot.
You know, you all make it so easy for me.
Morning Glory, Catholic from the start. Weekday mornings, 7 Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, joined by Patrick Madrid. And I said you can hear him mornings coast to coast on Relevant Radio, but I forgot he is the hardest working man in Catholic media. You can also hear him evenings on the Relevant Radio network across the country.
Not live, though.
You don't sleep,
give me
though, Patrick,
time to
right?
Rest.
Did you quit sleep or... to write all these books and
me
do all the
quit sleep? No.
I noticed, too, your speaker's calendar is usually not lacking for dates either. You're traveling quite a bit to give talks.
Well, I want to make hay while the sun shines. God gives us only so many days to be profitable as servants, and I want to be as busy as I can for as long as I can.
Let us go then. We'll keep you busy. Let us go to Matt in West Des Moines, which is way better than East Des Moines as far as – now I don't really know Des Moines that well. I don't know. But he's listening on 88.5 FM. Matt, your question for Patrick Madrid.
My question is we just passed an election cycle, but we have a lot of elections, and also with the recent news with like the caravan and all that, you hear a whole lot, well, especially from the media, but even inroads with sermons and that in church about Catholic social teaching. Now, my understanding from Aquinas and also from Thomas More is that there is no moral obligation to accept people outside of your country in, and that's pretty clear there. And also, why is it that we hear so much more from the pulpit about all these so-called social concerns that are on the, I would say, low end of the spectrum, and I can't remember the last time I heard abortion is wrong and can't be condoned from the pulpit, or any of the variety intrinsically evil aspects.
Okay, got two questions there. Let's take them in order. The first one is, do we have an obligation as Christians to welcome people from other countries into our country? I would say, yes, we do, but it's not an absolute, all-encompassing obligation. And I'm familiar with what St. Thomas Aquinas said on this issue. Jesus really would be the first place to refer to, and he said to welcome the stranger. And if you look at Matthew chapter 25 as an example in the section on the sheep and the goats, Jesus talks about feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, giving drink to the thirsty, welcoming the stranger, visiting the imprisoned. So we do have an obligation to do what we can to help in those regards. You're not obligated to, you know, every single poor person you ever meet to give clothing to. So Jesus is proposing to us a way of life and an ideal that we should strive for, but it doesn't mean that you must clothe every single person that you run across. That'd be impossible. You just can't do it. So I think the principle applies here as well, that when it comes to welcoming the stranger, you do what you can. You offer generously, but you can't do the impossible. And so this is where St. Thomas Aquinas' discussion of justice comes in, and that is that it's a matter not only of mercy toward people who need asylum, who need a place to live if they're fleeing from some, you know, war or something like that, as an example, but there's also the component of justice, which means not only justice for the person, but justice for the people who live in that country. And if a measure to help people wound up being helpful to the people being helped, but it was unjust or injurious to other people, then that's a bad decision. It's a bad way to do it. So the key, as I see it, is we have to figure out a way that will enable us to not only fulfill the obligation that we have to help people, but at the same time, to be just about it and to do it in a way that does not bring further harm and chaos into a society. So that's the golden mean that St. Thomas Aquinas talks about, where we avoid error through excess or defect. And that applies, I believe, to the immigration debate. I haven't really figured out yet myself how to do it, and I haven't heard anybody on the TV news has figured out how to do it. So it's still a problem, but it's not one that can't be solved. I just don't think we've found the right way to do it yet.
Matt?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, my question is, so you mentioned the corporal works of mercy and the words of Jesus, and I hear that a lot from social commentators. The part where I vehemently disagree is whether it or not that is a true function of government to impose upon its citizens, or if it's a personal obligation, moral obligation of individual. And if it is, as the Gospels have it, that that is a personal obligation on individuals and not through threat of force of government, then instead of just in having everyone come in and here's your welfare check and everything else, it would be more on where the system used to be, where you'd have sponsors of people who can take care of them, can get them into a trade, can help them out, and actually have some kind of moral value in people doing moral good to them, rather than the blanket violent force of government through fiat of law.
Okay, Patrick?
Okay, well, I detect in what you're saying maybe a politicization of this issue. So if we can try to avoid some of the politics surrounding this, which is not easy to do, I don't think it's an either-or thing. And it's not as though when you as the private person, when you extend generosity to somebody, that that's has moral value. But when the government, in the name of the people, does so, that it does not have moral value. That's not a premise that I would accept. Now, there's no question that governments can completely botch an attempt to extend generosity to people. We've seen it in Germany and Sweden and various other Western European countries, where through their political agendas, they've wound up practically destroying the circumstances for their own citizens as a result of the botched way that they've gone about trying to implement wholesale immigration. I don't want to see that here. I don't want to see that there either. But my sense is that we need to depoliticize this issue and not see the government as an enemy, and not see the effort to try to help people who really need our help is something that's inherently evil. Jesus, as I say, he preached on that, and he told us that we should do this. But I will say this much, to go back to the theme of justice, is that it is unjust, and it would be wrong, I would say morally wrong, if we seek to accomplish a good goal through a means that winds up causing more harm to other people. It'd be like, you know, if you want to feed homeless people, that's great. It's a good goal, but you can't go rob a liquor store to get the money to do that, because it would be using a means that in itself is immoral to accomplish a good goal. So the same principle applies here. And this is why the question about, you know, what about a country of laws that says that you can come in, we're happy to have you in, but you have to go through this procedure, and these are our laws, and you will respect our laws. There's nothing wrong with that. And to extend the point just a little bit further, if you'll let me do so, Cy, you'll notice that many of the people both religious figures as well as political figures, they're, you know, jumping up and down and tub thumping and beating their chests about how important it is to allow all these people to come into the United States. But they don't have any of those people in their homes. And they lock their doors to their offices and their buildings. And people can't just come in if they want to. They have to be invited in. So you can see there that there's an imbalance, I think, in the way that many people look at this issue. I guess I'll have to leave it at that.
I guess so, because that's the hard break. Matt in Des Moines, thank you so much for that call. It's open forum. Patrick Madrid is our guest. 888-31-TRUTH is the number. Right back after this.
This is Dale Alquist of the American Chesterton Society, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Advent is upon us and Christmas approaches. Catholic Answers wants you to know about our annual Christmas sale with hundreds of great faith-building resources all on sale at 20% off when you enter the promo code CALIVE18 at checkout. With great new products on doctrine, church history, morality, apologetics, and much more, there's simply no better time to stock up on resources to build up your faith and the faith of those around you. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to shop.catholic.com today to take advantage of what is truly the best Catholic sale on the internet going on now through the end of the year. And remember, enter promo code CALIVE18 at checkout and save 20% on hundreds of great resources throughout the store.
What difference does it make who or what you worship or what you believe? Sharing the faith used to make some people mad because it challenged their own strong beliefs. Today, it makes a lot of people yawn because they don't have strong beliefs about anything. Religious indifference is the great spiritual sickness of our age, a product of the relativism that dominates modern culture. This is Matt Nelson, and in my new book, Just Whatever, I'll take down the building blocks of religious indifference one by one. We'll look at the different kinds of indifference you tend to encounter in your friends and family members to see where they come from and why they're seductive. What you believe matters. Find out why and what to do about it in my new book, Just Whatever. You can order your copy of Just Whatever by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Dr. David Andrews. Do you have questions about the Catholic faith? Get the answers on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Patrick Madrid, our guest this hour. Patrick, the author of many, many books, including, editing a series of books, Surprised by Truth books, which I think, at least from what I hear in my travels, these have been very influential in people's lives. Lots of Patrick's books have, but if you're familiar with the Surprised by Truth books, these are books that Patrick put together, and the stories of conversion are extraordinary, as they often are, aren't they, Patrick? The story of how Jesus got me.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Surprised by Truth volumes, there are four in the series, and they're all chock full of men and women telling their stories about how they maybe at first hated the Catholic Church or whatever their circumstances were, and then they all have the same ending. They all wind up becoming Catholic, but each one of them traveled a different route, and they are fascinating, no question about it.
A part of the fascination, too, is just, I mean, the world that we live in, the world as it is, has put up tremendous intellectual and emotional obstacles to people coming into the church. So it's true. Almost like the stories have to be extra dramatic at this moment in history for many people come in. All right, Patrick, I talked about your radio and the speaking and the books and all that, but I forgot. You also have, every now and then you'll go by my house here in California on a pilgrimage because the missions. Where are you going now? What pilgrimages are you doing?
Well, thanks for asking. Yeah, Nancy and I will be leading a pilgrimage to the Holy Land and also Italy. That'll be next October 19th through the 31st of 2019. And if people are interested, they can just simply go to one of two places. They can go to my Twitter feed, just twitter.com/PatrickMadrid, and there's an informational image there with the phone number and the website. Or they can just go directly to the website, and that's canterburypilgrimages.net/PatrickMadrid. Got to put that part on there to get there. So Canterbury with a U, canterburypilgrimages, plural, .net/PatrickMadrid. And all the information is there. There's a brochure, gives all the details. It's going to be, I think, truly grace-filled. And all of the key places that anyone would want to go in the Holy Land. And a few places that not everybody gets to go in the Holy Land, we'll be going to.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Next October.
Do you work with Ashley over there at Canterbury? Or
I do. Yeah. She's a gem.
Yeah,
she's marvelous.
They do a really good job, Canterbury Tours. So
they do indeed.
So if Patrick Madrid is not enough, if the Holy Land is not enough, Canterbury Tours. They're awful good at what they do.
They are indeed.
Let's go to Brian in Ohio, listening on Catholic.com. Thanks for joining us on Catholic.com. Brian, your question for Patrick Madrid.
Hi, Patrick. I have a question about whether it's moral to sell property so that a Protestant church can be built. My situation is I'm Catholic, and I co-own a farm with my parents who aren't Catholic. And the Protestant church approached us to buy a piece of land and is willing to pay seven times what it's worth as farmland. And it just so happens that it's financially hard for farmers right now, and we were thinking of doing something. I'm not sure if this could be considered remote material cooperation with the teaching of falsehoods, so I need your expert opinion.
Well, gosh, yeah, thanks for the easy question. That is a toughie. That is a toughie because, on the one hand, I mean, people would say, well, there's nothing wrong with people worshiping God, is there? I mean, there's nothing wrong with people getting together to sing about Jesus and read the Bible and such. And that's true. There is nothing wrong with that. The question that you, the way you put it, though, it gets, I think, to the heart of the dilemma, which is if you're cooperating with something that would involve the teaching of something that's not true, then are you morally culpable for that? So let's pull back from this issue and substitute a related issue. Chances are, if you live in an incorporated area, wherever you happen to live, Brian, you're paying taxes, and that goes to fund your local school district. And your local school district is certainly teaching things like Darwinian evolution, and maybe they're even promoting things, alternative lifestyles and agendas and things like that. Now, you don't agree with that, and you're not intending any of those things, but yet you lawfully and morally, licitly, pay your taxes. So you are cooperating, and it is remote cooperation, but it's passive. You don't intend it. And so I think there may be a kind of parallel here where in the case of a Protestant church, they need to build a building, they want to buy the land, and prescinding from the question about how much money they're willing to pay, you know, are you really cooperating in something that's evil, or are you, in a formal sense, or are you passively cooperating in something that, yes, there is one aspect of that that is problematic, that's for sure, but is it sufficient that you become morally culpable? I don't think so. My sense of this is that you would not be committing a sin if you were to sell the parcel of land for the purpose of them building a building, any more so than, let's say, that their church burned down and you had a big steel barn, a big pole barn in your backyard, and you offered them to get out of the elements, to get out of the rain or the sunshine or whatever. You said, well, for the next couple of weeks, if you want to have your service here, that's fine. I don't agree with everything you're preaching, but I want to do something nice for you so that you're not suffering in the elements. So just thinking about it, I don't think that you would be committing a serious sin, or maybe not even any sin at all, if you were to do this. I would certainly subject my own opinion on this issue to somebody who's maybe more skilled in moral theology, but I don't see anything that suggests that you would be doing something sinful, taking all these things into account. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah. Well, think about the parallel. You pay taxes for things that go to things that are not true, teaching error, for example, and yet it's not immoral for you to pay your taxes. If you, there may be, let's say, I'm trying to think of other parallel examples to try to make this point. But I will say this. If you, in your conscience, feel the qualm that if you do this, you would be committing a sin, then don't do it. Follow your conscience. Sounds like you're likely to have a very well-formed conscience. So if you feel that this would be something that you shouldn't do, then don't do it. But I don't think in the objective sense that you would be doing anything sinful. Now, if it were, let's say, a group that, I don't know, let's choose some groups. Say Jehovah's Witnesses wanted to build a Kingdom Hall. They're preaching the Antichrist doctrine that Jesus is not God. And the Bible says anybody who comes to you and does not confess that Jesus is God, that person is the Antichrist, or, you know, is teaching an Antichrist doctrine. So there would be gradations in which I would say absolutely not. I wouldn't sell land for a local Muslim community to build a mosque. I just wouldn't. Because there, too, they specifically deny the divinity of Jesus. Protestant folk don't do that. You know, they have some errors in terms of their understanding of salvation. They have some errors when it comes to their understanding of authority. But by and large, the message that they're preaching and teaching is at least pointing people in the right direction. So there would be some examples where I would have scruples and I wouldn't sell the land if it were to go to a group that would be directly attacking the truth.
And we will leave it there. Brian, thank you so much for that. You know, I think a lot of Catholic dioceses, particularly in the East, have had to struggle with this because as the demographic changes have happened, they've had to sell off church properties. And they're very careful about who they sell to. They're not going to sell to some sordid business or something like that. But I do think there are instances where, as long as it was to a church that was not offensive to the Catholic faith, they've sold church buildings to Protestant denominations.
Does happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does happen.
So maybe, Brian, thank you very, very much for the call. It's wonderful to think of somebody thinking so, willing to apply both faith and reason to making a financial decision like that. A lot of us.
I was thinking the very same thing. I think Brian is ahead of the crowd in terms of him really thinking deeply about this issue. It's
right.
Good.
And how often do we separate our financial decisions from our faith life as if they're two different realms? And they are not.
That's true.
As the Feast of Christ the King reminds us this week.
Very true.
Emmett in Charlotte, North Carolina is next. He's listening to EWTN on channel 130, Sirius XM satellite radio. Emmett, you're up. Your question for Patrick Madrid.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Being in the Bible Belt, there's many times that I'm in the service industry, and I wish to engage with people that find out I'm Catholic and they wish to challenge me. The challenge is I've not been gifted with photographic memory and therefore cannot remember the scriptural context or that apply to their particular question. So I will extend perhaps an email to go on further to dialogue. But I was wondering if there's any tricks or anything, Patrick, in your books, where is that in the Bible and other things? Are there any tricks that we can use for those of us that do wish to engage in an apologetic form?
Well, there are always mnemonic devices that you could use to remember what that verse replies to. I'm like you. I don't have a photographic memory or anywhere near it. So one of the things I learned to do early on as a cub apologist long ago was I would, for example, let's say I was dealing with, a Protestant challenge on Doctrine X. Well, I would, in my Bible, I would highlight all the passages that the Protestant tract or the book brought up, so that they would be in my Bible already. And then in the margins, I would highlight and annotate on the margins what verses I would want to turn to respond to that argument. So I was making my own chain reference Bible. And it was very helpful to me because that way I didn't have to rely upon my limited memory powers because it was all there. So then I would say, okay, here's a verse they're quoting. All right, well, I know here are five other verses that speak to this issue, so then I could turn to that verse, and that would already then be highlighted, and I'd have more notes in the margin. So that's an easy way to do it. It'll take you a couple hours to do that, but that's time well spent. A mnemonic device in terms of associating a verse with the doctrine, that's a good way to do it. Flashcards, a good way to do it, Bible flashcards, and those are easily had, so you can build your memory that way. But honestly, I never did any of those things other than annotating my Bible. What I did was through rote repetition over and over and over again and over again at seminars, you know, doing hundreds and hundreds of seminars with Carl Keating in the early days of Catholic Answers, just barnstorming around from parish to parish. And after a while, you it's like muscle memory. It just it's there when you need it. And you remember the verse because you remember the verse. So for me, it was just by dint of sheer repetition. And I know that doesn't sound very appealing for many people, but if you've got the time and you're committed to doing that, it can really build a lot of dividends because you'll remember those things for, you know, the rest of your life.
Right. Practice makes perfect. I get it.
Yeah. Good way to put it.
Thank you very, very much.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you.
All right, we appreciate that call, Emmett. And somebody on Facebook just wrote, I thought he said demonic device.
No.
And it was indeed not. Don't use a demonic device.
Mnemonic.
But mnemonic. I believe there was a movie called Johnny Mnemonic. That must have been a guy who could memorize things, but I don't know.
Could be. Imagine the poor person who can't remember what the word mnemonic means. That would be doubly difficult, wouldn't it?
I don't know if you know this, but it's Giving Tuesday.
Taco Tuesday.
It's Taco Let's Tuesday and it's Giving Tuesday. Tuesday. I personally prefer Taco Tuesday.
Me too. Especially when they give me tacos, then it's
oh,
giving
that's
Tuesday
what should
and
happen.
Tuesday.
They should yes. give you tacos on Taco Giving Tuesday.
I posted a picture of delectable tacos on my Twitter feed just before the show started. So if anyone wants to see these babies on Giving Tuesday / Taco Tuesday, I have them right there on my Twitter feed at Patrick Madrid.
Do you know Delectable Tacos is the name of my band? Did I ever tell you that?
No, but I'd like royalties now because I think you stole that idea from me.
Does Taco Bell count as tacos?
Here's Donna, our director of marketing. You're probably here because it's Giving Tuesday, huh?
Yeah, I'm here to say Giving Tuesday's here. So,
but you understand this Giving Tuesday thing, and I don't. This is like a worldwide thing?
Well, it started in like 2012, and it was really geared around, moving away from the commercialism.
Of the season?
Of the season.
Yeah.
And so people started turning their thoughts toward giving back to something they believed in.
Oh, okay.
And so we're not about jumping on the popular, hype of the of Giving Tuesday.
Yeah.
But
we like giving.
Well, we do.
We're in favor
and,
of giving.
And it's a worldwide phenomenon. So this is our first year, doing any effort around Giving Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a huge deal, but we're recognizing it.
Okay, so this is a good opportunity then, because almost everybody who's listening to us right now is listening on a radio station.
Sure.
We don't own any radio stations.
No.
You could support that local radio station.
Absolutely.
Today.
EWTN and all of their affiliates, a lot of them need support.
Yeah, and you could also always go to Catholic.com and support us. I mean, we're not going to say no. But
right.
We just
wink, wink.
But we just did a big campaign, and people are so generous to us. And we're still counting the money. I mean, people were so generous to us.
We are so thankful ourselves to our supporters and the listeners of Catholic Answers Live and people who use our website, Catholic.com. We're reaching people all over the world.
Yeah.
And how many countries are there in the world? I don't know.
There's like, I'm not good with numbers, but there's got to be more than 50.
There's lots.
It's got to be more than 50, maybe even more than 75. I'm really not good with numbers, but it's up there.
Yeah,
it's up
it
there.
Is.
So,
is.
All right. Don't forget your local Catholic radio station.
Please.
If you're listening to this, you're sharing it with somebody else. Don't forget them. Don't forget EWTN, that wonderful network. And if Catholic.com helps you.
Visit Catholic.
Hey, it's Giving Tuesday.
It's Giving Tuesday. Visit our website.
Thanks, Donna.
And see what's up there. All right. Thanks, Cy.
All right.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
We need EWTN Radio for the reason that Mother Angelica founded this entire enterprise. She always saw this as a spiritual growth network. It was to be an enterprise in media that reached people in all aspects of their life. She saw this as a holistic approach to reaching the whole person in the middle of the world and bringing them truth and life.
Raymond Arroyo thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Patrick Madrid here with us for this hour. Patrick, author, speaker, TV, radio host, maker of films, memorizer of Bible passages. It just goes a father,
eater,
grandfather, and lover of tacos. And also one of my favorite things about Patrick Madrid, I have never met anybody who knows as much trivia about pop music.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I haven't. I don't know if you remember this, but we were involved in a pop music trivia quiz once, and I was on your team. I just felt so much glory accrued to me as we defeated everyone else, and I said nothing. So,
I think that was on one of the Catholic Answers cruises.
Yeah, that was on one of the Catholic Answers cruises.
Yeah,
exactly.
That was fun.
Right.
That was fun.
It was fun for me. I was like, yeah, we nailed it again. McKay is up next. In northern Oklahoma, listening on 97.3 FM. McKay, your question for Patrick Madrid.
Hi. So my question for you guys today is what started the tradition for ringing the bells during consecration?
Okay. Going back into the mists of time, it seems to me that it was because during the traditional Latin Mass, in the West here, but this is also true in the East, where they also use bells, but for a somewhat different reason. In the East, the Eastern churches and now the Orthodox churches, the sanctuary is separated from where the people sit by an iconostasis. So it's a wall made out of icons that's not entirely solid. You can kind of see through it a little bit, but in a similar way in the Latin Rite church, where the priest celebrating Mass was facing the same direction as the people, so they're all facing the Lord together. And the priest, let's say at a low Mass, for example, would be praying the words of consecration in a low voice. It wasn't easy for the people to know exactly when the consecration was taking place. So ringing the bells was a way to not only, kind of symbolize the joy that people have at the Lord becoming present, but also as a way to alert the people, because you wouldn't want people to be adoring a piece of bread, which is what the host is before the consecration. It was a way of safeguarding and letting people know, okay, now the Lord is present, transubstantiation is taking place. So the bells would be rung as a way to signal that for the people. That would be a practical explanation for it. When it began and, who began it, I don't really know. But I suppose a little bit of sleuthing in the Catholic Encyclopedia might give you some further information. But I think that's the practical reason why it started a long time ago.
McKay, how does that answer strike you?
That definitely helped. Thank you.
You're welcome.
McKay, may I ask you how old you are?
I am 13, actually.
Oh, you know what? Marie wants to give you a book. I know she does. Marie loves to give out books to 13-year-olds. You have to ask your mom and dad. If your mom or dad or says it's okay, you can. I'm gonna
my
put
mom
you...
is right next to me, actually. So
all right, then assistant producer Marie will get your digits, and we'll have a book that we send to you.
Nice.
She's looking at me angrily because I just gave her more work to do, but I'm sorry.
Can I jump in with this suggestion? If you really want to go deep in this, McKay, there is a book. It's a two-volume book. It's called The Mass of the Roman Rite, and the author is Joseph Jungmann, J-U-N-G-M-A-N. It's exactly about the history of the Mass in the Latin Rite of the Church. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that he does talk about this issue and gives a bit of history as to, maybe more background on using bells at Mass. So you might want to check that out.
McKay, thank you very, very much again for that call. Hang on for angry assistant producer Marie. She didn't look that angry. Chris in Centennial, Colorado is up next, listening on 1060 AM. Chris, your question for Patrick Madrid.
I guess first of all, I should say thank you, Patrick. Surprised by Truth is very instrumental in my conversion.
Oh, thank you, Chris.
To a point.
I found many of those stories absolutely wonderfully powerful and moving, and others just kind of left my head spinning and going, what? And mm-hmm. I gather that, you know, that sort of diversity is intentional. But it got me thinking, C.S. Lewis, bless his heart, if he'd been born 30 years later, he would have been one of us, stated in his cross-examination that God has infinite ways to bring somebody into his kingdom, quote unquote, including some that I especially dislike. So my question for you is, in the process of compiling all these stories and interviewing all these people and documenting all these beautiful conversions, have you encountered somebody who has converted to Catholicism for the wrong reason or for a bad reason? Is there such thing as a bad reason to become Catholic?
That's a fascinating question. Thank you. Well, with regard to the men and women who contributed chapters to the four different Surprised By books, no, I mean I wouldn't have put their chapters in if I detected that was the problem. But in the abstract, I think the single worst reason for somebody to convert to the Catholic Church is if they don't believe it. You know, if they're simulating conversion for gain, or for, you know, popularity, or for some other reason, that's not a reason to become Catholic. It's because you love Jesus and you want to be in the church he established. And if that motivation is not present, at least in some sense, however small it might be, then I would say that that's not a really authentic conversion. Some people, I've known people who have converted to the Catholic faith simply so they could get married to somebody. And, you know, I can understand why they would do that. But when it's not heartfelt, then it seems very hollow to me. So thankfully, none of the people in the Surprised by Truth books came across it all that way. I'll give you a quick example from pop culture. The movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding. You may have seen it. Well, the woman, the main star, she meets this really handsome guy. And because her family is so super Greek and Greek Orthodox and so forth, he realizes pretty quickly that he's not going to be able to marry her unless he converts to Greek Orthodoxy. So he does. But he just goes through the motions. And it's pretty clear he doesn't really believe it. He doesn't really care about it. He's just doing it as checking off a box so he can marry this girl. That's not a good reason to convert. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I guess you need to realize the truth is there before it can surprise you.
Well, let's look at Acts chapter 2 briefly. Something similar happens. Peter is preaching on the day of Pentecost. The assembled crowds, many of them believe what he's saying about Jesus Christ. And so as if one person, they cry out to him, what do we do now? And his first word is the answer. He says, repent and be baptized. So it's not, hey, everybody, get baptized. It's repent. In other words, there has to be a conversion of the heart. There has to be an acceptance in your heart of Jesus Christ. Because he's speaking to adults, obviously. He's not referring to infants. So it seems like that's pointing in this direction, that true conversion, involves that metanoia, that turning away from sin and the transformation that God's grace brings. And if you're doing it for any other reason, it's not a good reason. You know, I don't want to see people not become Catholic, but I certainly wouldn't want to see people coming into the Catholic Church just for
gain
or something like that. Falsely, exactly.
Chris, thank you. It's something I think a lot of modern people miss about the Catholic Church, Patrick, and you just put me in mind of it, that the Catholic Church doesn't go around imposing the faith on anyone. Even in situations where there were very powerful forces like the Spanish Empire bringing the Catholic faith, you had to ask to be baptized. You had to choose it for yourself. No one was supposed to force you to do it. I'm not saying it never happened, but no one ever was supposed to.
No, they weren't. And there were many problems that accrued in the church when pagans, for example, when the Emperor Constantine in the early 4th century, when he said, hey, the official religion is the Catholic Church now, he had a lot of people who came in who didn't really believe it, but they thought they would get an advantage if they did what the emperor wanted. That's not a good reason.
Patrick Madrid has been our guest. Patrick, just one more time, say the website where you can find out about if they want to go on a pilgrimage with you.
Oh, yeah, the pilgrimage to the Holy Land that I'm leading with Bishop Wall of Gallup, New Mexico, next October. Go to twitter.com/Patrick Madrid. You'll see all the information there. Or go to canterburypilgrimages.net/Patrick Madrid. Thanks, Si.
Thank you very, very much, Patrick. Don't worry if we haven't gotten your call. Tim Staples will be here next hour. We're going to get to it. So if you're on the line, stay on the line. If you haven't called yet, 888-31-TRUTH is the number. That's 888-318-7884. Right back with more Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live.